stories, then? She puffed her cheeks out at that. Story of my life. She waited for an answer, but none was forthcoming. She guessed danger makes some folk blather and some clamp tight. Sadly, she was in the former camp, and surrounded by the latter. She crept forwards on all fours, stone hot under her hands, up next to Crying Rock, wondering afresh what the ghost woman's interest in all this was. Didn't seem the type to be interested in gold or rebels, or children, neither. No way of knowing what went on behind that lined mask of a face, though, and she wasn't shining any lights inward.
"What's this Ashrank place like?" asked Chai.
"A city carved from the mountain."
"How many are in there?"
"Thousands once. Few now. Judging from those who left, very few, and mostly the young and old, not good fighters."
"A bad fighter sticks a spear in you. You're just as dead as with a good one."
"Don't get stuck, then."
"You're just a mine of good advice, ain't you?"
"Fear not," came Joubert's voice. Across the passageway she could only see the gleam of his eyes, the gleam of his ready sword, but she could tell he was smiling. "If God is with us, he will be our shield."
"If he's against?" asked Shai.
"Then no shield can protect us."
Before Shai could tell him what a great comfort that was, there was scuffling behind, and a moment later Savian's crackling voice.
"It's time. Koska's boys are in the valley."
"All of them?" asked Joubert.
"Enough of them."
"You sure?"
The shudder of nerves up Shai's throat almost choked her. For months now she'd been betting everything she had on finding Pit and Row. Now the moment might have come, she would have given anything to put it off.
"Course I'm bloody sure. Go!"
A hand shoved at her back, and she knocked into someone and almost fell, staggered on a few steps, fingers brushing the stone to keep her bearings. The tunnel made a turn, and suddenly she felt cooler air on her face and was out blinking into the light. Ashrank was a vast mouth in the mountainside, a cavern cut in half, its floor scattered with stone buildings, a huge overhang of rock shadowing everything above. Ahead of them, beyond a daunting drop, a grand expanse of sky and mountain opened out. Behind the cliff was riddled with openings, doorways, windows, stairways, bridges, a confusion of wall and walkway on a dozen levels, houses half-built into the rock face, a city sunk in stone. An old man stared at them, shaved bald, a horn frozen on the way to his mouth. He muttered something, took a shocked step back, then Joubert's sword split his head, and he went over in a shower of blood, horn bouncing from his hand. Crying Rock darted right, and Shai followed, someone whispering, "Shit, shit, shit," in her ear, and she realized it was her. She rushed along low beside a crumbling wall, breath punching hard, every part of her singing with an unbearable fear and panic and rage, so wild and strong she thought she might burst open with it, sick it up, piss it out. Shouting from high above, shouting from all around. Her boots clanked over metal plates polished smooth and scrawled with writing, grit pinging and rattling from her heels. A tall archway in a cleft in the rocks, bouncing and shuddering as she ran. A heavy double door, one leaf already closed, two figures straining to haul the other fast, a third on the wall above, pointing at them, bow in hand. Shai went down on one knee and knocked her own narrow. A shaft looped down, missed one of the running mercenaries, and clattered away across the bronze. Snap of the bowstring, as Shai let fly, and she watched her own arrow cover the distance, hanging in the still air. It caught the archer in the side, and she gave a yelp. A woman's voice, or maybe a child's, staggered sideways and off the parapet, bounced from the rock, and fell crumpled beside the gate. The two dragon people who'd been shutting the doors had found weapons. Old men, she saw now, very old. Joubert hacked at one and sent him reeling into the rock face. Two of the mercenaries caught up with the other and cut him down, swearing, chopping, stamping. Shai stared at the girl she'd shot lying there. Not much older in Roe, she reckoned. Part ghost, maybe, from the whiteness of her skin and the shape of her eyes, just like Shai. Blame it on your ghost blood. She stared down, and the girl stared up, breathing fast and shallow, saying nothing, eyes so dark and wet and blood across her cheek. Shai's free hand opened and closed, useless.
"Here!"
roared Joubert, raising one hand. Shai heard a faint answering call through the gate, saw men struggling up the mountainside. Kosker's men, weapons drawn. Caught a glimpse of Sweet, maybe, struggling along on foot. The other mercenaries started dragging the doors wide to let them through. Doors of metal, 4 fingers thick, but swinging as smooth as a box lid.
"God is with us," said Joubert,
his grin spotted with blood. God might have been, but Lamb was nowhere to be seen.
"Where's Lamb?"
she asked, staring about.
"Don't know."
Savion only just managed to force the words out. He was breathing hard, bent over.
"Went the other way."
She took off again.
"Wait!"
Savion wheezed after her, but he weren't running anywhere. Shai dashed to the nearest house, about enough thought in her pounding head to sling her bow over her shoulder and pull her short sword. Wasn't sure she'd ever swung a sword in anger. When she killed that ghost that killed Leaf, maybe. Wasn't sure why she was thinking about that now. Heaved in a great breath and tore aside the hide that hung in the doorway, leapt in, blade first. Maybe she'd been expecting Pitt and Roe to look up, weeping grateful tears. Instead, a bare room, naught there but strips of light across a dusty floor. She barreled into another house, empty as the first. She dashed up a set of steps and through an archway in the rock face. This room had furniture, polished by time, bowls neatly stacked, no sign of life. An old man blundered from the next doorway and right into Shai, slipped and fell, a big pot dropping from his hands and shattering across the ground. He scrambled away, holding up a trembling arm, muttering something, cursing Shai, or pleading for his life, or calling on some forgotten god, and Shai lifted the sword, standing over him, took an effort to stop herself killing him. Her body burned to do it, but she had to find the children before Koska's men boiled into this place and caught the killing fever. Had to find the children, if they were here. She let the old man crawl away through a doorway.
"Pitt!"
she screamed, voice cracking. Back down the steps and into another dim, hot, empty room, an archway at the back leading to another yet. The place was a maze, a city built for thousands, like Crying Rock had said. How the hell to find 2 children in this? A roar came from somewhere, strange, echoing.
"Lamb!"
She clawed sweaty hair out of her face. Someone gave a panicked screech. There were people spilling from the doorways now, from the low houses below, some with weapons, others with tools, one grey-haired woman with a baby in her arms. Some stared about, sensing something was wrong, but not sure what. Others were hurrying off, away from the gate, away from Shai, towards a tall archway in the rock at the far end of the open cavern. A black-skinned man stood beside it, staff in hand, beckoning people through into the darkness. Werdenur. And close beside him, a much smaller figure, thin and pale, shaven-headed. But Shai knew her even so.
"Row!"
she screamed, but her voice was lost. The clatter of fighting echoed from the rocky ceiling, bounced from the buildings, coming from everywhere and nowhere. She vaulted over a parapet, hopped a channel where water flowed, startled as a huge figure loomed over her, realized it was a tree trunk carved into a twisted man shape, ran on into an open space beside a long, low building, and slid to a stop. A group of dragon people had gathered ahead of her. 3 old men, 2 old women, and a boy, all shaven-headed, all armed, and none of them looking like they planned to move. Shai hefted her sword and screamed,
"Get out of my fucking way!"
She knew she wasn't that imposing a figure, so it was something of a shock when they began to back off. Then a flatbow bolt flitted into the stomach of one of the old men, and he clutched at it, dropping his spear. The others turned and ran. Shai heard feet slapping behind her, and mercenaries rushed past, whooping, shouting. One of them hacked an old woman across the back as she tried to limp away. Shai looked towards that archway, flanked by black pillars and full of shadow. Werdenur had vanished inside now. Ro, too, if it had been her. It must have been. She set off running. Insofar as Koska had a best, danger brought it out in him. Temple hurried, cringing along, sticking so close to the walls that he would occasionally scrape his face upon them. His fingernails so busy with the hem of his shirt, he was halfway to unravelling the whole thing. Braccio scuttled, bent almost double. Even Friendly prowled, with shoulders suspiciously hunched. But the old man had no fear, not of death, at least. He strode through the ancient settlement, utterly heedless of the arrows that occasionally looped down, chin high, eyes aglitter, steps only slightly wayward from drink, snapping out orders that actually made sense.
"Bring down that archer!"
pointing with his sword at an old woman on top of a building.
"Clear those tunnels!"
waving towards some shadowy openings beside them.
"Kill no children, if possible. A deal is a deal."
Wagging a lecturing finger at a group of cantics already daubed with blood. Whether anyone took any notice of him, it was hard to say. The company of the gracious hand were not the most obedient at the best of times, and these times in no way qualified. Danger brought no best from Temple. He felt very much as he had in Dagoska during the siege, sweating in that stinking hospital, and cursing, and fumbling with the bandages, and tearing up the clothes of the dead for more. Passing the buckets all night long, lit by fires, water slopping, and for nothing. It all burned anyway. Weeping at each death, weeping with sorrow, weeping with gratitude that it was not him, weeping with fear that it would be him next. Months in fear, always in fear. He had been in fear ever since. A group of mercenaries had gathered around an ancient man, growling unintelligible insults through clenched teeth in a language something like Old Imperial, swinging a spear wildly in both hands. It did not take long for Temple to realize he was blind. The mercenaries darted in and out. When he turned, one would poke him in the back with a weapon. When he turned again, another would do the honors. The old man's robe was already dark with blood.
"Should we stop them?" muttered Temple.
"Of course," said Koska. "Friendly?"
The sergeant caught the blind man's spear just below the blade in one big fist, whipped a cleaver from his coat with the other, and split his head almost in half in one efficient motion, letting his body slump to the ground and tossing the spear clattering away.
"Oh, God," muttered Temple.
"We have work to do,"
snapped the old man at the disappointed mercenaries.
"Find the gold."
Temple tore his hands away from his shirt and scratched at his hair instead, scrubbed at it, clawed at it. He had promised himself, after Avastok, that he would never stand by and watch such things again. The same promise he had made in Kadir, and before that in Styria. And here he was, standing uncomplaining by, and watching. But then, he had never been much for keeping promises. Temple's nose kept running, tickling, running. He rubbed it with the heel of his hand until it bled, and it ran again. He tried to look only at the ground, but sounds kept jerking his wet eyes sideways, to crashes and screams and laughs and bellows, to whimpers and gurgles and sobs and screeches. Through the windows and the doorways he caught glimpses, glimpses he knew would be with him as long as he lived, and he rooted his running eyes on the ground again and whispered to himself, "Oh, God!" How often had he whispered it during the siege? Over and over, as he hurried through the scorched ruins of the lower city, the bass rumble of the blasting powder making the earth shake as he rolled over the bodies, seeking for survivors, and when he found them burned and scarred and dying, what could he do? He had learned he was no worker of miracles. Oh God, oh God! No help had come then, no help came now.
"Shall we burn them?"
asked a bow-legged Styrian, hopping like a child eager to go out and play. He was pointing up at some carvings chiselled from ancient tree trunks, wood polished to a glow by the years, strange and beautiful. Koska shrugged.
"If you must, what's wood for, after all, if not to take a flame?"
He watched the mercenary shower oil on the nearest one and pull out his tinderbox.
"The sad fact is, I just don't care much anymore either way. It bores me."
Temple startled as a naked body crashed into the ground next to them. Whether it had been alive or dead on the way down, he could not say.
"Oh, God," he whispered.
"Careful,"
bellowed Friendly, frowning up at the buildings on their left. Koska watched the blood spread from the corpse's broken skull, scarcely interrupted in his train of thought.
"I look at things such as this and feel only a mild ennui. My mind wanders on to what's for dinner, or the recurrent itch on the sole of my foot, or when and where I might next be able to get my cock sucked."
He started to scratch absently at his codpiece, then gave up.
"What horror, eh? To be bored by such as this?"
Flames flickered merrily up the side of the nearest carving, and the Styrian pyromaniac skipped happily over to the next.
"The violence, treachery, and waste that I have seen, it's quite squeezed the enthusiasm out of me. I am numbed. That's why I need you, Temple. You must be my conscience. I want to believe in something."
He slapped a hand down on Temple's shoulder, and Temple twitched, heard a squeal, and turned, just in time to see an old woman kicked from the precipice.
"Oh, God! Exactly what I mean!"
Koska slapped him on the shoulder again.
"But if there is a God, why in all these years has he not raised a hand to stop me?"
"Perhaps we are his hand," rumbled Joubert, who had stepped from a doorway wiping blood from his sword with a cloth. "His ways are mysterious."
Koska snorted.
"A whore with a veil is mysterious. God's ways appear to be insane."
Temple's nose tickled with perfumed smoke as the wood burned. It had smelled that way in Dagoska when the Gurkish finally broke into the city, the flames spraying the slum buildings, spraying the slum dwellers, people on fire flinging themselves from the ruined docks into the sea. The noise of fighting coming closer, Cardia's face lit in flickering orange, the low murmur of the others praying, and Temple tugging at his sleeve and saying,
"You must go! They will be coming!"
And the old priest shaking his head and smiling as he squeezed at Temple's shoulder and saying,
"That is why I must stay."
What could he have done then? What could he do now? He caught movement at the corner of his eye, saw a small shape flit between two of the low stone buildings.
"Was that a child?"
he muttered, already leaving the others behind.
"Why does everyone pout so over children?"
Koska called after him.
"They'll turn out just as old and disappointing as the rest of us."
Temple was hardly listening. He had failed Sufine. He had failed Cardia. He had failed his wife and daughter. He had sworn always to take the easy way. But perhaps this time... He rounded the corner of the building. A boy stood there, shaven-headed, pale-skinned, red-brown eyebrows like Shai's. The right age, perhaps. Could it? Temple saw he had a spear in his hands, a short spear, but held with surprising purpose. In his worry for others, Temple had for once neglected to feel worried for himself.
Perhaps that showed some level of personal growth. The self-congratulations would have to wait, however.
"I'm scared," he said, without needing to dissemble. "Are you scared?"
No response. Temple gently held out his hands, palms up.
"Are you... Pitt?"
A twitch of shock across the boy's face. Temple slowly knelt and tried to dig out that old earnestness. Not easy, with the noises of destruction filtering from all around them.
"My name is Temple. I'm a friend of Shai's."
That brought out another twitch.
"A good friend."
A profound exaggeration at that moment, but a forgivable one. The point of the spear wavered.
"And of lambs, too."
It started to drop.
"They came to find you, and I came with them." "They're here."
It was strange to hear the boy speak the common tongue with the accent of the near country.
"They're here," he said. "They came for you." "Your nose is bleeding."
"I know." Temple wiped it on his wrist again. "No need to worry." Pitt set down his spear and walked to Temple and hugged him tight. Temple blinked for a moment, then hesitantly put his arms around the boy and held him.
"You are safe now," he said. "You are safe."
It was hardly the first lie he had ever told. Shai padded down the hallway, desperate to run on, and scared to the point of shitting herself at once, clinging to the slippery grip of her sword. The place was lit only by flickering little lamps that struck a gleam from the metal designs on the floor, circles within circles, letters and lines, and from the blood smeared across them. Her eyes flicked between the tricking shadows, jumped from body to body, dragon people and mercenaries too, hacked and punctured and still leaking.
"Lam,"
she whispered, but so quietly even she could hardly hear it. Sounds echoed from the warm rock, spilled from the openings to either side, screams and crashes, whispering steam, weeping and laughter leeching through the walls. The laughter worst of all.
"Lam!"
She edged to the archway at the end of the hall and pressed herself to the wall beside it, a hot draught sweeping past. She clawed the wet hair from her stinging eyes again, flicked sweat from her fingertips, and gathered her tattered courage. For Pitt and Roe, no turning back now. She slipped through, and her jaw fell. A vast emptiness opened before her, a great rift, an abyss inside the mountain. A ledge ahead was scattered with benches, anvils, smith's tools. Beyond, a black gulf yawned, crossed by a bridge no more than 2 strides wide, no handrail, arching through darkness to another ledge and another archway, maybe 50 strides distant. The heat was crushing, the bridge lit underneath by fires that growled far out of sight below, streaks of crystal in the rocky walls sparkling, everything metal, from the hammers and anvils and ingots to her own sword, catching a smelter's glow. Shai swallowed as she edged out towards that empty plunge, and the far wall dropped down, 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 as if this were some upper reach of hell the living never should have broached.
"You'd think they'd give it a fucking rail," she muttered.
Werdinur stood on the bridge, behind a great square shield, a dragon worked into the face, bright point of a spear blade showing beside it, blocking the way. One mercenary lay dead in front of him, another was trying to ease back to safety, poking away wildly with a halberd. A third knelt not far from Shai, cranking a flatbow. Werdinur lunged and smoothly skewered the halberdier with his spear, then stepped forward and brushed him off the bridge. He fell without a sound, not of his falling, not of his reaching the bottom. The dragon man set himself again, bottom edge of that big shield clanging against the bridge as he brought it down, and he shouted over his shoulder, in words Shai didn't understand. People shuffled through the shadows behind him, old ones and children too, and a girl running last of all.
"Row!"
Shai's scream was dead in the throbbing heat, and the girl ran on, swallowed in the shadows at the far end of the bridge. Werdenur stayed, squatting low behind his shield and watching her over the rim, and she gritted her teeth and gave a hiss of frustrated fury. To come so close and find no way around.
"Have this, asshole!"
The last mercenary leveled his flat bow, and the bolt rattled from Werdenur's dragon shield and away into the dark, spinning end over end, a tiny orange splinter in all that inky emptiness.
"Well, he's going nowhere."
The archer fished a bolt from his quiver and set to cranking back the string again.
"Couple more bows up here and we'll get him, sooner or later. Don't you fucking worry about—"
Shai saw a flicker at the corner of her eye, and the mercenary lurched against the wall, Werdenur's spear right through him. He said,
"Oh,"
and slid to sitting, setting his bow carefully on the ground. Shai was just taking a step towards him when she felt a gentle touch on her shoulder. Lam was at her back, but no kind of reassurance. He'd lost his coat and stood in his leather vest, all scar and twisted sinew, and his sword broken off halfway, splintered blade slathered in blood to his elbow.
"Lam,"
she whispered. He didn't even look at her, just brushed her away with the back of his arm, black eyes picked up a fiery glimmer and fixed across that bridge, muscles starting from his neck, head hanging on one side, pale skin all sweat-beaded, blood-dotted, his bared teeth shining in a skull grin. Shai shrank out of his way like death itself had come tapping at her shoulder. Maybe it had. As if it was a meeting long arranged, Werdenur drew a sword, long and straight and dull, a silver mark glinting near the hilt.
"I used to have one of those."
Lam tossed his own broken blade skittering across the floor and over the edge into nothingness.
"The work of the Maker himself," said Werdenur. "You should have kept it."
"Friend of mine stole it."
Lam stepped towards one of the anvils, fingers whitening as he wrapped them around a great iron bar that lay against it, tall as Shai was.
"And everything else."
Metal grated as he dragged it after him towards the bridge.
"And it was better than I deserved."
Shai thought about telling him not to go, but the words didn't come, like she couldn't get the air to speak. Wasn't another way through that she could see, and it wasn't as if she was about to turn back. So she sheathed her sword and shrugged her bow into her hand. Werdenur saw it and took a few cautious steps away, light on the balls of his bare feet, calm as if he'd trod a dance floor rather than a strip of stone too narrow for the slimmest of wagons to roll down.
"Told you I'd be back,"
said Lam, as he stepped out onto the bridge, the tip of the metal bar clattering after him.
"And so you are," said Werdenur.
Lam nudged the corpse of the dead mercenary out of his way with a boot, and it dropped soundless into the abyss.
"Told you I'd bring death with me."
"And so you have. You must be pleased."
"I'll be pleased when you're out of my way."
Lam stopped a couple of paces short of Werdenur, a trail of glistening footprints left behind him, the two old men facing each other in the midst of that great void.
"Do you truly think the right is with you?"
asked the dragon man.
"Who cares about right?"
And Lam sprang, lifting that big length of metal high and bringing it down on Werdenur's shield with a boom made Shai wince, leaving a great dent in the dragon design and one corner bent right back. The dragon man was driven sprawling, legs kicking as he scrambled from the brink. Before the echoes had faded, Lam was roaring as he swung again. This time Werdenur was ready, though, angled his shield, so the bar glanced clear and swung back. Lam jerked away snake-quick, and the sword missed him by a feather, jerked forward snake-quick, and caught Werdenur under the jaw, sent him tottering, spitting blood. He found his balance quick, though, lashed left and right, sent sparks and splinters flying from the metal bar as Lam brought it up to block.
Shai drew a bead, but even close as she was, the two old men were moving too fast, deadly, murderous fast, so any step or twitch could be their last. No telling who she'd hit if she let loose the arrow. Her hand jerked about as she eased onto the bridge, trying to find the shot, always a few moments behind, sweat tickling at her flickering eyelids as she looked from the fight ahead to the void under her feet. Werdenur saw the next blow coming and slipped clear, nimble for all his size. The bar caught the bridge with a shrieking crash, struck sparks, left Lam off balance long enough for the dragon man to swing. Lam jerked his head away, and rather than splitting his skull, the bright point left a red line down his face, drops of blood flicking into nothingness. He staggered three steps, heel slapping at the very brink on the last, space opening between the two men for just a breath, as Werdenur brought his sword back to thrust. Shai might not have been much at waiting, but when the moment came, she'd always had a talent for just diving in. She didn't even think about shooting. Her arrow flitted through the darkness, glanced the edge of the shield, and into Werdenur's sword arm. He grunted, point of his blade dropping and scraping harmlessly against the bridge, as Shai lowered her bow, hardly believing she'd taken the shot, still less hit the target. Lam bellowed like a mad bull, swinging that length of metal as if it was no heavier than a willow switch, knocking Werdenur this way and that, sending him reeling along the bridge, no chance to hit back even if he'd been able, with Shai's arrow through his arm, no chance to do anything but fight to keep his footing. Lam kept after, tireless, merciless, driving him off the bridge and onto the ledge at the far end. One last blow tore the shield from Werdenur's arm and sent it tumbling away into the darkness. He stumbled against the wall, sword clattering from his limp hand, bloody now from the leaking arrow wound. A shape came flying from the shadows in the archway, the flash of a knife as it sprang on Lam, and he staggered back towards the brink, wrestled with it, flung it off and into the wall. A shaven-headed girl crumpled against the floor. Changed. So changed, but Shai knew her. She flung her bow away and ran, no thought for the drop to either side, no thought for anything but the space between them. Lam plucked the knife out of his shoulder, along with a string of blood, and flicked it away like a spent toothpick, face still locked in that red smile, bloody as a new wound, seeing nothing, caring for nothing. Not the man who'd sat beside her on that wagon so many swaying miles, or patiently ploughed the field, or sang to the children, or warned her to be realistic. Another man, if he was a man at all. The one who'd murdered those two bandits in Avastok, who'd hacked Sanjeed's head off on the plains, who'd killed Glamour Golden with his hands in the circle. Death's best friend indeed. He arched back with that length of metal in his fists, cuts and notches from the Maker's sword all angrily glinting, and Shai screamed out, but it was wasted breath. He'd no more mercy in him now than the winter. All those miles she'd come, all that ground struggled over, and just those few paces left were too many as he brought the bar hissing down. Werdenur flung himself on top of Ro, and the metal caught his big forearm and snapped it like a twig, crashed on into his shoulder, opened a great gash down his head, knocked him senseless. Lam raised the bar again, screaming froth on his twisted lips, and Shai caught hold of the other end of it as she hurtled off the bridge, whooped as she was jerked into the air. Wind rushed, the glowing cavern flipped over, and she crashed upside down into stone. Then, all quiet. Just a faint ringing, shuffling boots.
Get up, Shai. Can't just lie around all day. Things need doing on a farm.
But breathing was quite the challenge. She pushed against the wall, or the floor, or the ceiling, and the world spun right over. Everything whirling like a leaf on a flood. Was she standing? No, on her back, one arm dangling, dangling over the edge of the drop, blackness and fire, tiny in the distant depth. That didn't seem like a good idea. She rolled the other way,
managed to find her knees, everything swaying, trying to shake the fog from her skull. People were shouting, voices vague, muffled. Something knocked against her, and she nearly fell again. A tangle of men, shuffling, wrestling. Lamb was in the midst, face wild as an animal's, red wet from a long cut right across it, squealing and gurgling sounds that weren't even halfway to swearing. Koska's big sergeant, Friendly, was behind him, with one arm around his neck, sweat standing from his forehead with the effort, but his face just faintly frowning like he was teasing out a troubling sum. Sweet was trying to keep a grip on Lamb's left arm, getting dragged about like a man who'd roped a crazy horse. Savian had Lamb's right, and he was croaking, "Stop! Stop, you mad fucker!" Shai saw he had a knife drawn, and didn't think she could stop him using it, didn't even know if she wanted to. Lamb had tried to kill Ro. All they'd gone through to find her, and he'd tried to kill her. He would have killed Shai, too, whatever he'd promised her mother. He would have killed all of them. She couldn't make sense of it. Didn't want to. Then Lamb went rigid, near dragging Sweet off the edge of the cliff, whites of his eyes showing under flickering lids. Then he sagged, gasping, whimpering, and he put his bloody three-fingered hand over his face. All the fight suddenly put out. And Savian patted Lamb on the chest, drawn knife still held behind his back, and said, "Easy, easy." Shai tottered up, the world more or less settled, but her head throbbing, blood tickling at the back of her skull. "Easy, easy." Right arm hard to move, and her ribs aching so it hurt to breathe, but she started shuffling for the archway. Behind her, she could hear Lamb sobbing. "Easy, easy." A narrow passageway, hot as a forge, black but for a flaring glow up ahead and glimmering spots across the floor. Werdenur's blood. Shai limped after, remembered her sword, managed to get it drawn, but could hardly grip the thing in her numb right hand, fumbled it across to her left, and went on, getting steadier, halfway to jogging now, the tunnel getting brighter, hotter still, and an opening ahead, a golden light spilling across the stones. She burst through and slid to a sudden stop, went over on her ass, and lay still, propped on her elbows, gaping. "Fuck!" she breathed. They were called dragon people, that much she knew, but she'd never guessed they actually had a dragon. It lay there in the center of a vast domed chamber like the big scene from a storybook. Beautiful, terrible, strange, its thousand metal scales dull glistered with the light of fires. It was hard to judge its size, coiled about and about as it was, but its tapered head might have been long as a man was tall. Its teeth were dagger blades, no claws. Each of its many legs ended in a hand, golden rings upon the graceful metal fingers. Beneath its folded paper wings, gears gently clicked and clattered, wheels slowly, slowly turned, and the faintest breath of steam issued from its vented nostrils, the tip of a tongue like a forked chain softly rattling, a tiny slit of emerald eye showing under each of its four metal eyelids. "Fuck," she whispered again, eyes drifting down to the dragon's bed, no less of a child's daydream than the monster itself. A hill of money. Of ancient gold and silver plate, of chains and chalices, coins and coronets, of gilded arms and armor, of gem-encrusted everythings. The silver standard of some long-lost legion thrust up at a jaunty angle. A throne of rare woods adorned with gold leaf stuck upside down from the mass. There was so much it became absurd. Priceless treasures rendered to gaudy trash by sheer quantity. "Fuck!" she muttered one last time, waiting for the metal beast to wake and fall in blazing rage upon this tiny trespasser. But it didn't stir, and Shai's eyes crept down to the ground. The dotted tracks of blood became a smear, then a trickle, and now she saw Werdenur lying back against the dragon's foreleg, and Ro beside him, staring, face streaked with blood from a cut on her scalp. Shai struggled up and crept down the bowl-shaped floor of the chamber, the stone underfoot all etched with writing, gripping tight to her sword, as though that feeble splinter of steel was anything more than a petty reassurance. She saw other things among the hoard as she came closer. Papers with heavy seals, miners' claims, bankers' drafts, deeds to buildings long ago fallen, wills to estates long ago divided, shares in fellowships and companies and enterprises long deceased, keys to who knew what forgotten locks. Skulls, too, dozens of them, hundreds. Coins and gemstones cut and raw, spilling from their empty eye sockets. What things more valued than the dead? Werdenur's breath came shallow, robe, blood-soaked, shattered arm limp beside him, and Ro clutching at the other, Shai's broken arrow still lodged near the shoulder.
"It's me,"
Shai whispered, scared to raise her voice, edging forward, stretching out her hand.
"Ro, it's me."
She wouldn't let go of the old man's arm. It took him reaching up and gently peeling her hand away. He nudged her towards Shai, spoke some soft words in his language, and pushed again more firmly. More words, and Ro hung her shaved head, tears in her eyes, and started to shuffle away. Werdenur looked at Shai with pain-bright eyes.
"We only wanted what was best for them."
Shai knelt and gathered the girl up in her arms. She felt thin and stiff and reluctant, nothing left of the sister she'd had so long ago. Scarcely the reunion Shai had dreamed of, but it was a reunion.
"Fuck!"
Nikomo Koska stood in the entrance of the chamber, staring at the dragon and its bed. Sergeant Friendly walked towards it, sliding a heavy cleaver from inside his coat, took one crunching step onto the bed of gold and bones and papers, coins sliding in a little landslip behind his boot heel, and, reaching forward, tapped the dragon on the snout. His cleaver made a solid clank, as if he'd tapped an anvil.
"It is a machine,"
he said, frowning down.
"Most sacred of the Maker's works,"
croaked Werdenur.
"A thing of wonder, of power, of—"
"Doubtless," Koska smiled wide as he walked into the chamber, fanning himself with his hat. But it wasn't the dragon that held his eye. It was its bed.
"How great a sum, do you think, Friendly?"
The sergeant raised his brows and took a long breath through his nose.
"Very great. Shall I count it?"
"Perhaps later."
Friendly looked faintly disappointed.
"Listen to me."
Werdenur tried to prop himself up, blood oozing from around the shaft in his shoulder, smearing the bright gold behind him.
"We are close to waking the dragon. So close. The work of centuries. This year, perhaps next, you cannot imagine its power. We could share it between us."
Koska grimaced.
"Experience has taught me I'm no good at sharing." "We will drive the outsiders from the mountains, and the world will be right again, as it was in the old time. And you, whatever you want, is yours.
Koska smiled up at the dragon, hands on hips.
It certainly is a remarkable curiosity, a magnificent relic. But against what is already boiling across the plains, the Legion of the Dumb, the merchants and farmers and makers of trifles and filers of papers, the infinite tide of greedy little people.
He waved his hat towards the dragon.
Such things as this are worthless as a cow against a swarm of ants. There will be no place in the world to come for the magical, the mysterious, the strange. They will come to your sacred places and build tailors' shops and dry goods emporia and lawyers' offices. They will make of them bland copies of everywhere else.
The old mercenary scratched thoughtfully at his rashy neck.
You can wish it were not so. I wish it were not so, but it is so. I tire of lost causes. The time of men like me is passing. The time of men like you.
He wiped a little blood from under his fingernails.
So long past, it might as well have never been.
Werdenor tried to reach out, his hand dangling from the broken forearm, skin stretched around the splintered bones.
You do not understand what I am offering you.
But I do.
And Koska set one boot upon a gilded helmet wedged into the hoard, and smiled down upon the Maker's right hand.
You may be surprised to learn this, but I have been made many outlandish offers. Hidden fortunes, places of honor, lucrative trading rights along the Kadiri coast, an entire city once, would you believe? Though admittedly in poor condition. I have come to realize,
and he peered discerningly up at the dragon's steaming snout,
a painful realization because I enjoy a fantastic dream just as much as the next man.
And he fished up a single golden coin and held it to the light.
That one mark is worth a great deal more than 1,000 promises.
Werdenor slowly let his broken arm drop.
I tried to do what was best.
Of course.
Koska gave him a reassuring nod and flicked the coin back onto the heap.
Believe it or not, so do we all.
Friendly. The sergeant leaned down and neatly split Werdenor's head with his cleaver.
No!
Shrieked Ro, and Shai could hardly hold on to her, she started thrashing so much. Koska looked mildly annoyed at the interruption.
It might be best if you removed her. This really is no place for a child.
Greed. They set off in a happy crowd, smiling, laughing, congratulating one another on their work, comparing the trophies of gold and flesh they had stolen from the dead. Ro had not thought ever in her life to look upon a man worse than Gregor Cantless. Now they were everywhere she turned. One had Acherin's pipe, and he tooted a mindless three-noted jig, and some danced and capered down the valley, their clothes made motley by the blood of Ro's family. They left Ashrank in ruins, the carvings smashed and the heartwood smoking charcoal, and the bronze panels gouged up, and the longhouse burned with the blessed coals from its fire pit, all forever stained with death. They despoiled even the most sacred caves, and tipped the dragon over, so they could steal the coins that made its bed. Then they sealed it in its cavern, and brought down the bridge with a burning powder that made the very earth shake in horror at the heresy.
"Better to be safe,"
the murderer Koska had said, then leaned towards the old man called Savion
and asked,
"Did you find your boy? My notary salvaged several children. He's discovered quite the talent for it."
Savian shook his head.
"A shame. Will you keep searching?"
"Told myself I'd go this far, no further."
"Well, every man has his limit, eh?"
And Koska gave him a friendly slap on the arm, then chucked Roe under the chin and said,
"Cheer up! Your hair will grow back in no time."
And Roe watched him go, wishing she had had the courage or the presence of mind or the anger in her to find a knife and stab him, or rip him with her nails, or bite his face. They set off briskly, but soon slowed, tired and sore and gorged on destruction. Bent and sweating under the weight of their plunder, packs and pockets bulging with coins. Soon they were jostling and cursing each other, and arguing over fallen trinkets. One man tore the pipe away and smashed it on a rock, and the one who had been playing it struck him, and the great black man had to drag the two of them apart, and spoke about God, as if he was watching. And Roe thought, if God can see anything, why would he watch this? Shai talked, different than she had been, pared down and pale and tired as a candle burned to the stub, bruised as a beaten dog, so Roe hardly recognized her. Like a woman she saw in a dream once, a nightmare. She blathered, nervous and foolish, with a mask of a smile. She asked the nine children to tell their names, and some gave their old names and some their new, hardly knowing who they were anymore. Shai squatted in front of Evin when he told his name and said,
"Your brother Leif was with us for a bit."
She put the back of her hand to her mouth, and Roe saw it was trembling.
"He died, out on the plains. We buried him in a good spot, I reckon. Good as you get out there."
And she put her hand on Roe's shoulder then and said,
"I wanted to bring you a book or something, but didn't work out."
And the world in which there were books was a half-remembered thing, and the faces of the dead so real and new about her, Roe could not understand it.
"I'm sorry we took so long."
Shai looked at her with wet in the corners of her pink-rimmed eyes and said,
"Say something, can't you?"
"I hate you,"
said Roe, in the language of the dragon people, so she would not understand. The dark-skinned man called Temple looked sadly at her and said in the same tongue,
"Your sister came a long way to find you. For months, you have been all she has wanted."
Roe said,
"I have no sister. Tell her that."
Temple shook his head.
"You tell her."
All the while, the old Northman watched them, eyes wide but looking through her, as if he had seen an awful thing far off. And Roe thought of him standing over her with that devil smile, and her father giving his life for hers, and wondered who this silent killer was who looked so much like Lamb. When his cut face started bleeding, Savian knelt near him to stitch it and said,
"Hardly seemed like demons in the end, these dragon folk."
The man who looked like Lamb didn't flinch as the needle pierced his skin.
"The real demons you bring with you."
When Roe lay in the darkness, even with fingers stuck in her ears, all she could hear was Hearfax screaming and screaming as they burned her on the cooking slab, the air sweet with the smell of meat. Even with her hands over her eyes, all she could see was Ulstal's face, sad and dignified, as they pushed him off the cliff with their spears, and he fell without a cry, the bodies left broken at the foot. Good people she had laughed with, each with their own wisdom, made useless meat, and she could not understand the waste of it. She felt she should have hated all these outsiders beyond hating, but somehow she was only numb and withered inside,
as dead a thing as her family herded off the cliff, as her father with his head split, as Gully swinging from his tree. The next morning, men were missing, and gold and food missing with them. Some said they had deserted, and some that they had been lured by spirits in the night, and some that the dragon people were following, vengeful. While they argued, Ro looked back towards Ashrank, a pall of smoke still hanging over the mountainside in the pale blue, and felt she was stolen from her home once again. And she reached inside her robe and clutched the dragon scale her father had given her, cool against her skin. Beside her, on a rock, the old ghost woman stood frowning.
"Bad luck to look back too long, girl,"
said the white-bearded one called Sweet, though Ro reckoned the ghost 50 years old at the least, only a few yellow hairs left among the grey she had bound up with a rag.
"It does not feel so fine as I thought it would."
"When you spend half your life dreaming of a thing, its coming to pass rarely measures up."
Rose saw Shy look at her, then down at the ground, and she curled her lip back and spat through the gap in her teeth. A memory came up then, all unbidden, of Shy and Gully having a contest at spitting in a pot, and Ro laughing, and Pit laughing, and Lamb watching and smiling, and Ro felt a pain in her chest and looked away, not knowing why.
"Maybe the money'll make it feel finer," Sweet was saying.
The old ghost woman shook her head.
"A rich fool is still a fool. You will see."
Sick of waiting for their missing friends, the men went on. Bottles were opened, and they got drunk and slowed under the weight of their booty, toiling in the heat over broken rocks, straining and cursing with mighty burdens, as though gold was worth more than their own flesh, more than their own breath. Even so, they left discarded baubles scattered in their wake, sparkling like a slug's trail, some picked up by those behind, only to be dropped a mile further on. More food had gone in the night, and more water, and they squabbled over what was left, a haunch of bread worth its weight in gold, then 10 times its weight, jewels given over for half a flask of spirits. A man killed another for an apple, and Koska ordered him hanged. They left him swinging behind them, still with the silver chains rattling around his neck.
"Discipline must be maintained,"
Koska told everyone, wobbling with drunkenness in the saddle of his unfortunate horse, and up on Lamb's shoulders, Pit smiled, and Ro realized she had not seen him smile in a long time. They left the sacred places behind and passed into the forest, and the snow began to fall and then to settle, and the dragon's warmth faded from the earth, and it grew bitter chill. Temple and Shy handed out furs to the children as the trees reared taller and taller around. Some of the mercenaries had thrown their coats away so as to carry more gold, and now shivered where they had sweated before, curses smoking on the chill, cold mist catching at their heels. 2 men were found dead in the trees, shot in the back with arrows while they were shitting. Arrows that the mercenaries had themselves abandoned in Ashrank so they could stuff their quivers with loot. They sent out other men to find and kill whoever had done the shooting, but they did not come back, and after a while the rest pressed on, but with a panic on them now, weapons drawn, staring into the trees, starting at shadows. Men kept vanishing one by one, and one man took another who had strayed for an enemy and shot him down. And Koska spread his hands and said,
"In war there are no straight lines."
They argued over how they might carry the wounded man, or whether they should leave him, but before they decided he died anyway, and they picked things from his body and kicked it into a crevasse. Some of the children gave each other grins because they knew their own family must be following, the bodies left as a message to them. And Evin walked close beside her,
and said in the dragon people's tongue, "Tonight we run," and Ro nodded. The darkness settled without stars or moon, and the snow falling thick and soft, and Ro waited.